Welcome, everybody, to the Hammer and Rails podcast. Back with you following a thrilling overtime, double overtime victory over Illinois.
How
with
about Yozoi. Them Boilers?
See, I threw off the rhythm, and I was like, I know Casey's going to jump in here somewhere. With you, as always, I'm your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Casey Bartley.
And like I said, we're here to talk about that thrilling double overtime victory against Illinois that occurred on Monday. And we're here to look ahead to the IU game that is going to be on January 20th. That is Thursday, 7 p.m. on FS1. So rather than get right into the excitement of the Illinois game, I have a question inspired by something I found in my house today. So, Casey, you ready for this?
Yeah. Is it the thing you were going to clear your throat with?
No, it is not that. Okay. Not that at all. Well, we'll get into that later, maybe. What is the strangest or just kind of most off-ball piece of Purdue memorabilia that you have?
Oh, I'm not a memorabilia. Wow, today's hard.
Memorabilia. You're not wrong. But you don't have anything? You don't have anything strange?
I'm trying to think if I have anything strange Purdue related. You know, I've moved like 3 times in the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true. And it was from Indiana to South Carolina, right. So
you clear out every time. And I never had a bunch of like Purdue swag to begin with. I don't think I have a satisfying answer. The only thing I have are like all these badges from Purdue games I've been to, which
those are cool. Those are cool.
They're cool, yeah. But they're not like strange.
No. So the reason that I ask this is I work from home. I'm basically home all day. So upstairs I have this old like CRT TV. It's really giant, really heavy, and I've got like all these old video game systems plugged into it. And okay. Follow me. Mm-hmm. So on the TV I've got a universal remote, and it is a Purdue universal remote.
Okay.
So it was made, I don't even know what company made this thing, but I remember, so I got it from when I worked in the Purdue promotions department. They had just like a bunch of random items that they like would just put out sometimes, and were like, does anybody want these? If not, we're going to throw them away. And there was this Purdue universal remote. It's basically, I mean, it is literally just a white universal remote, normal, you know, buttons, everything else. And then at the bottom, there's just a motion P in it.
I like it.
And it's just like, I don't know why this exists or who was selling these, but I have one now and I use it upstairs. It's just, I remembered it was up there today because my son was like trying to like play and mess around. And I was like, oh, I'll give him this remote with nothing in it that can do no harm. And he looked at it and was like, no. And he just like threw it to the ground. So I was like, man, no, it's a hard audience up here. But I appreciated that I still had that and it still works. So, well, I mean, okay, Casey didn't really have a great answer. I have this universal remote that for some reason is Purdue branded. I'm not sure. I remember them selling them in the bookstores. But like I said, I got mine for free from when I worked in the athletic department. So it's a fascinating little thing. What's that?
Yeah, I've never seen a universal Purdue remote. Do you have cactus glasses?
Yes, of course. I have cactus cups, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I don't think I've ever taken one home.
Oh, my gosh. So since we're talking about this, I might as well tell you this story. So my wife's name is Jess. One of my best friends in college was also named Jess. Different person. So this story, while involving someone named Jess, is not about my wife. So
I'm glad you clarified for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, just in case she listens to this, I don't want her to be like, are you telling a story about someone else that's not me? You know, she's going to be like, that wasn't me. You're remembering someone else.
How dare
so,
you.
Exactly. So her, my friend Jess and I were like, we were cactus friends. We would go all the time on Thursdays. And she lived like just up the hill past Chauncey at one of those apartment complexes that it was far enough away that it was like a pain in the ass to walk after you left the cactus. Mm-hmm. But like, you were like, I'm
you
not going to drive.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So you did it. Yeah. So one night we were at the cactus, like as they closed, and Jess was like, I was like, hey, let's go. She's like, no, wait. And I mean, there were a few beverages obviously involved because we were there, you know, at 3 a.m. And she's like, no, just wait. And I was like, okay.
No.
So we were hanging around just like talking to somebody she knew. And then, like, you know, the lights come on in the cactus and they're like, all right, everybody out. And you're like, oh, this is weird. So she goes, okay, let's go. So she literally, her and I, and I can't like just throw her under the bus entirely. We just walked around and took like 10 cactus.
I knew where this was going.
And it was like, we were walking around and we're like, oh, I don't have this color. I don't have this color. And this was obviously much, much before COVID. So, you know, there were no worries about that. So we walked this, like, it was probably a mile and a half, 2 miles to her apartment, like with these just mountains of cactus cups. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we just looked like complete morons. Some police officer probably saw us and was like, as long as they're not walking in the street, it's fine. And I think I probably still have some of those exact cups. It was quite the time.
I'm the person that leaves it on the table or
that doesn't surprise
throws
me.
It away on the way out. Yeah, there's no. First of all, I didn't go to Purdue, so it was not a regular thing in my life to go to the cactus. So when I went, it was an occasion, and that occasion usually ended in a lot of drinking.
Debauchery.
A lot of drinking, and I didn't need to bring anything home with me in multiple ways.
Right. Yes, that's true. I'll tell you, as a good Purdue alumnus and a former cactus regular, we do use a cactus cup to dump water on my son when he takes a bath. So there is something. There is something that I think so, and I know a lot of people my age who have kids who use those as like a bath cup for their child. So
Bruce would be proud of you.
I'm sure he would be. So before we get off this topic and look to the Illinois game, I have one question about the cactus for you. What was your go-to drink? Were you a beer guy there, or did you go with a mixed drink?
Oh, God. So, weirdly enough, when I was, like, early 20s, which is the appropriate time to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the perfect time.
I wasn't a drinker, which is shocking, considering how I turned out. But, so, I don't think I even had a regular drink. I think I tried a lot of drinks there, because they were cheap and in a big thing, and I thought, oh, this is the way that I can have hard liquor, I guess.
Right.
So I remember, I know like diet and vodka was a thing for a while.
Yeah.
Not great.
There was also, I know a lot of girls who I went to the cactus with would always order vodka, water, and lime.
Yeah.
And that was just atrocious sounding to me.
I had a little while where that was a drink too. I mean, you gotta watch those carbs.
I guess.
These hips, they don't shape themselves.
Right.
So, but there was definitely rum and diet is like the easiest thing to get there. Yeah. I know you're on board for that because that's your go-to anyway. But
yeah, the rum and coke was always my go-to. I know you're gonna, as a former bartender and as someone who's you know, has a taste for the finer things in life, I'm sure you're going to yell at me.
Oh, no.
But no. You already know where I'm going.
Yeah.
But I will say, I did get quite a handful of Long Island iced teas.
God,
those cactus.
What a garbage drink. What a garbage person.
hey, listen, I'll go to bat for a Long Island iced tea any day of the week. It's a drink for when you want to get drunk and you're okay if it tastes kind of bad.
Yeah, I've never tasted one.
Well, then how do you can't form an opinion then?
I can't. I've made like 90,000 of them.
Yeah, but you've never tasted it. You could
like
it. Yeah,
because I watch what goes in there. There's no way I like it.
Everything goes in there.
All your clear liquors, and then, no. That should not be consumed, especially in a cactus cup.
Well, I'll say this.
Too much, sir.
I'll say this. It shouldn't be consumed maybe after a certain age. I'm much too old for a Long Island iced tea at this point in my life, I think.
Oh, it would wreck you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. But at 22 years old, when someone's like, you can have 32 ounces of this for, I think it was like $1.75 for a Long Island versus $1.25 for a rum and coke. Like, I mean, that's just basic math.
I don't know how we didn't die.
It's true. Right. So the two other things I want to mention about the cactus, because I could just talk about the cactus all day. RIP.
Should we bring Bruce on?
that would be
I could get Bruce on here if we want to talk to the piano man.
So the worst was when I would order a rum and coke, because, you know, it's always like asses to elbows at the bar in the cactus. So you're just like scooting up there. And
it's my favorite body part.
I know. Elbows. I'm not. Right. And I am not an attractive young college co-ed.
Oh,
so
come on.
I didn't always get the fastest service. So, you know, it happens. I get it. And when you would ask for a rum and coke and the bartender would bring it back to you, you'd like quickly turn around. But I would always take a drink immediately because I was like, you just would know, obviously, right away if they gave you a whiskey and coke. And it's just like, nope, not doing that. And I would just have to turn around and be like, buddy, this is whiskey. He's like, oh, you said rum. I was like, yes, it did. Like, because that if you give Andrew Ledman a whiskey and coke, Andrew Ledman is going to end up vomiting. So that is a no-go zone. for me.
That explains a lot about your college.
It does. It does. And then you might even know this story, and I'll tell it really quickly. So I was in undergrad, decided I wanted to go to grad school at Purdue, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, found out I got funded, so I wasn't going to have to pay for my grad school. And it was like the greatest day. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is incredible. It happened to be a Thursday. my buddies and I were like, well, we're going to the Cactus. So we go to the Cactus, and my favorite liquor, and again, you can make fun of me for this, I don't really care, is Malibu.
Oh, no. I thought we were going to a bad place, but we went way off.
Coconut rum is delicious, and I will hear no slander of it. And
it's not it's not the girliness of it. I just think it tastes like suntan lotion.
And I get
I'm
that.
Not a coconut person. I can't get that.
That's fine.
I like it.
I could see how you could say that. For me, it's delicious. You throw that in like a Coke Zero, one of the best drinks in the world.
So nothing else, just Malibu and Coke.
Well, I mean, I'll put it in anything. I mean,
but that's just not much alcohol content.
No, no.
You have to drink a lot.
Dude, I am 36 years old. I'm not like trying to get like hammered every time I have a drink.
Are you 36 year old in the story?
No. But see, here it is. So this is like even in college, I was like, this is my favorite drink. But I was a poor college student, mm-hmm. so I would buy like bottom shelf rum and like Smirnoff as the vodka. These just everybody does it. It's what you do. So I go to the Cactus and I'm like, you always pay in cash at the Cactus because it's just easier. And I asked the guy at the bar, I was like, all right, can I get a Malibu and Coke? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he takes my cup, starts to turn around, and he goes, he like stops. And he turns around and looks at me, and he goes, did you say Malibu and Coke? And I said, yep. And he goes, it's going to be like $9, right? And I was like, I don't care.
I'm funded.
I was like, bring it on. Do what you need to do. Just bring it. I said, I'll pay. And I was like, I remember just tipping very well to that guy because he was like – he wanted to make sure. And I was like, that was very nice of him. Here's a few extra for you. But I was like, I was on cloud nine, top of the world. I was like, don't care what it costs. This is what I'm drinking. It was great.
And paid off now. How many did you have that night?
Oh, I would say 3.
All Malibu?
I believe. Probably, yeah.
Big rolling.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 Cactus cups was the limit of anything. If I got beyond that, it was like that was just a terrible idea.
Yeah, that's – do we know the ounces on the Cactus cups?
I believe they're 32.
Okay, that would be my guess. So
– yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty – it's not as crazy as you think because you're holding up this, giant-looking plastic mug, and it's really just like 2.5 drinks. But, yeah, college kids, it's more than enough.
It is amazing we all survived to this point. So that is enough reminiscing about the Cactus. Let's talk about this thrilling victory Purdue had – at Illinois, which at Illinois is kind of key here because that's going to be a really good victory for Purdue come NCAA tournament seeding time. It was, of course, double overtime, final score 96-88. Star of the game, I think, has got to be Zach Edey. I mean, he played out of his mind. But, Casey, am I wrong in that? You have somebody else in mind, or is he the clear choice?
I mean, clear choice? Sasha Stevanovich was pretty damn good.
Yeah. He's the other option.
The degree of difficulty in those shots that he made, all of them in the second half, pretty much. We've been waiting for him to go off. I think I mentioned that last podcast. It feels like we're due. And we were due, and he went 5-8 from 3, all those in the second half or overtime. A lot of those were either way on the move or way behind the three-point line, and he was terrific. 22 points on what? 22 points on 11 shots. He missed 4 free throws. The free throws will knock him off. It was Edey. Because it was Edey's day because he went up against, the bully in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Last year's Coburn. Best big man. And he made Kofi Coburn look underwhelming. And that's very hard to do.
Yeah, just a terrible game. And I mean, Edey started out. I mean, Purdue seemed to have a plan going in. They're like, we are going to pound the ball down low. We're going to give it to Edey. We're going to make Coburn stop him. Hoping, I think, that they could get him in foul trouble, just like we talked about in the last pod. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it worked. It worked exactly how they wanted it to. And huge credit to Edey for going 9-14 against Coburn, who, the premier big man in the league last year and certainly one of the best this year as well. And yes, big boy baskets. I mean, these were not easy moves. He's got Coburn on him like that for the majority of time, riding him hard. Of course, Payne was in there, but he only played for 7 minutes, so that was a whole different situation. But I mean, they held Coburn. He only played 22 minutes. Wound up with 10 points, but 4 of those came from the free throw line. So 10 points on 9 shots. I mean, it was just incredible what they did.
Held him to 5 rebounds. Edie was dominant. He comes in and he is just this game wrecker now. And like you said, Illinois let him go one-on-one in an island. They trusted Coburn. You have to when you have that kind of big man inside. And it wasn't – it. The fouls were one thing, but, I mean, Edie didn't draw most of those fouls on Coburn. Ivy drew 2 of them on him.
Yeah.
I think another one was on someone else. But it was that Edie could actually score. You know, he's not moving Coburn in the way that he normally moves guys, because Coburn – is huge. He's strong. He's nearly 300 pounds, 7 foot. He is a wall. But Edie has advanced so much already in his post game. Going to his left hand, that running from the right side of the paint, running little layup to the left side, unstoppable. And he's able to do that against one of the best post defenders in the country. This was a coming out party for Edie. 20 points. He only went to the line twice. He worked hard for those points, 8 rebounds, including 3 on the offensive end, and he just looked bigger than Kofi, quicker than Kofi, and at this point, what big man is better than Edie in the country? One-on-one or whatever? He is a problem, and he finally got to set up, like, on stage, starting against Coburn, and he lived up to everything. He hit that left-hander over Coburn from about 8 foot out, and I lost my mind.
I mean, it was undoubtedly his best game in his Purdue career, not only because of, you know, the stats that we just mentioned, but also because of who he did it against and where the game was. I mean, the game was in a very hostile State Farm Arena, formerly Assembly Hall, against an Illinois team that was ranked 17th in the country and against one of the best big men in the country. And before we go further, I want to say kudos to that Illinois crowd. I mean, they were great. They were involved. They were loud. And they really, I think, rattled Purdue a couple times and kind of willed Illinois to take that lead in the first half when they went on that 10-0 run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that point, I was really kind of scared of how the Purdue team would respond, because when you're in a hostile arena and you kind of start losing things and, you know, I'm sorry, the game starts getting away from you and all of a sudden you're down and that crowd just keeps getting louder and louder and building, it's easy to not respond. So I was impressed with what Purdue did after that, which was, of course, that 17-0 run after the Illinois 11-0 run. I'm sorry. I mean, just the 17-2
run to finish the half.
Yeah, 17-2 to finish the half, because I believe Coburn had 2 free throws, or someone had 2 free throws at the end there. But I mean, just an incredible way to finish the half.
Yeah. You know, the reason that I am most optimistic about this team this year and why I continue to be is we see in pockets of these games, saw it against Villanova, saw it against North Carolina, saw it against NC State. We've seen it against the bad teams, and then we see it again against Illinois. We are so capable at going on these monster spurts, and it's not an accident, and it happens once, twice, 3 times a game, and it happens pretty much every game where we just go on these 5-minute stretches where we are just banshees, and we are running the court, we're knocking down shots, we're finding our big men inside, and we are just scary good. And that's a real big effect of having Jaden Ivey on the team and then these big guys who are just great. So I am very optimistic that when we get to tournament time, these spurts are going to carry us. We've responded well. Obviously, we have the 2 disappointing losses. In both those games, we kind of had spurts early and then fizzled out. So, but I am encouraged that this team has such highs in these. You know, basketball is a game of runs, and our runs are generally better than other teams.
Yeah. I mean, so what else stands out to me is, I mean, a couple things, but Mason Gillis played 43 minutes. There were, of course, not the usual 40 in this game. There were 50 because of the two overtimes. But Gillis was out there more than anybody else on this team at 43 minutes, followed by Ivy with 42 and Stefanovic with 41. So it's just kind of incredible to see how Gillis has gone from, you know, being on the bench to start due to that suspension to trying to find his way working back in to overtaking Caleb First, who only got 3 minutes. And just being so kind of important to how this team plays, grabbed 4 rebounds, 1 assist, did have 2 turnovers, so you don't love that. But, I mean, he really was hustling out there. And you mentioned something in the group chat about this was a game where Mason Gillis probably had a pretty good opportunity just because of his build versus the right. Build of Illinois.
Yeah, he was able to bully his guy. And Illinois, you know, they have all those twitchy guards. They don't really have a second big man. None of their second big men play like big men. So this was definitely a Gillis game because he was going to be guarding out on the perimeter because they play 4 out. It made sense. When you switch Gillis onto a guard, you don't feel entirely like he's on an island out there with no hope. So this was a game that made sense for him. He played pretty well. You know, he's not afraid to muck it up. He's physical. You have to like those things. I still think there's going to be plenty of times where First is a better matchup on the court or will have his moments, but Gillis was definitely a solidifying force this game, even if his points don't really speak to that. But he was really good and playing 43 minutes in a big time game on the road. Like, you have your coach's trust, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, Painter obviously sees these guys more than we do, but he obviously has to love the effort Gillis has given and to put so much trust in him when, you know, he started in kind of in Painter's doghouse, given what happened in the offseason. So that's huge for him. You mentioned Sasha, and obviously we talked about it in the group chat again. A couple of people compared him to NCAA tournament Ryan Klein, and that's just a sentence that I love to hear, and hopefully we get more of that. I mean, he was just a dead eye in the second half and in overtime, wound up 5 of 8 from 3, so it was just a beautiful thing, and he was hitting tough shots, like you said. These were not just wide open, no one guarding him because they lost him. You know, these were tough, contested shots, falling to his right on that one in the overtime, and I mean, he just looked incredible out there.
Yeah, and that's what we need, and that's what we've not had from him enough. The reason why we say that about Klein is in the biggest game, in the biggest moments, with the toughest shots, he knocked them down. Hopefully Sasha's career ends similar where he has those moments, and this is one of the first ones that really stick to your mind. He's hit game winners, you know, he's hit some shots late, but he hasn't dominated a game late like that, especially on the road before. So we've seen his maturation. We've seen the way that his game has improved and that he does other stuff, that he gets to the line. Didn't make him today, but, you know, 9 free throw attempts from Stefanovic. Yes, please.
Yeah.
2 assists, yeah. 8 rebounds. I thought he was really good on the defensive boards late in the game. When other players were tired, he went after a couple balls that were 50-50 at best, and he went and got them. And he's doing things like that. And, like, we talk about him, 22 points on the road. He's maybe our 4th best player. Like, this is why Purdue has the ceiling it does. This is why we can go into Illinois and win games like this. Because we've gotten this far, we haven't even really mentioned Ivy's game yet. Or Trey Williams, who wasn't good.
No. And I mean, Ivy was not good in one sense. I mean, he took 10 shots.
Yes.
He took 10 shots, only made 3 of them. His saving grace was, obviously, he got fouled about 300 times.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the free throw line 15 times, made 13 of them. So he did miss, you know, a big one at the end of regulation. Yeah. So you don't love that. Purdue was up 4 with 35 seconds left in the second half, wound up obviously going into overtime. There was an opportunity to extend the lead, but Ivy missed a free throw there. And it happened again in overtime. Purdue missed a free throw at the end of the first overtime. So while, you know, we've talked about free throws this entire podcast, you know, throughout the basketball season, it seems like this was one that almost came back to bite Purdue in the ass.
Yeah. Sasha missed quite a few late. Obviously, the front end of a 1-1 that late in the game. A couple free throws missed where we could have extended it another possession. Those are killers, and you got to just find whatever resolve inside of you to calm down enough but stay focused. And, you know, just find your fundamentals, trust your stroke. It's hard. It's hard when your whole body and mind are all super focused on this one thing, and you know how much it means, and it's such a finesse shot, so it's tough. Hopefully we start draining those, get the right people to the line, but overall we still shot 26 of 32 from the free throw line. So
yeah, it's still pretty good.
Good
still
game. Good. Couple moments where it would have been a lot nicer to have them go in.
Yeah. There were a couple things that I scratched my head on, and I wonder if you did the same thing. So at the end of the first half, Purdue had the ball with just a few seconds left. And for some reason, neither Jaden Ivey nor Zach Edey touched the ball. Both were on the court. Neither of them got a touch of the ball. I thought that was strange. And I also wondered why, given that Trevion Williams did not have his best game, 6 of 18 from the floor, I wondered why we saw so much of Trevion in the first overtime and so little Edey. That was surprising to me.
The Trey thing, I think, is simply that even if he's not on, even if he's not playing well, even if he's not playing better than Edey, in tough situations like that, and we saw this come to bear with some of his assists, Purdue is tougher to guard because you don't know where the ball is going to end up. If Edie's in there, we're trying to get in the post, you know it's going to be in the post. Usually ends up well, and like I was screaming as it was happening, I want Edey in there. But Trey offers you a little bit more of a release valve, and then we saw him, you know, find Gillis for that big layup. Find Wheeler for two layups.
Wait, Wheeler?
Hunter, sorry.
There we go.
I don't know why those two are just imprinted in my brain together, but found Hunter for two layups. And I think it's just a matter of he's a senior and he's more comfortable with the ball in his hand. And a possession doesn't necessarily have to end up with him, even though he was forcing a lot in this Illinois game and missing shots that you just don't see him miss. It was very, very strange.
Yeah, it was. Uncharacteristic for him. I mean, he also had four turnovers, which is not something you see a lot. He kind of made some passes that were, to quote a former Purdue recruit and then, former Purdue player, I guess, a little too much sauce on those passes. And, Purdue team wasn't really ready for him, but, you know, that's going to happen. I think there's at least one more thing I want to talk about, and that was Payne's little cheap shot on Sasha Stefanovic in the second half. I think it was in the second half, right? And the fact that I don't really know if Sasha was like jawing at him or what set him off, but there is no way you can call that any sort of basketball move. The ball was on the other half of the court. Payne just goes ahead and throws kind of an elbow and extends his arms at Sasha's neck. And if you'll recall, this guy has done this before because he's a transfer from Florida, laid out a guy from Tennessee. I can't remember if it was 2019 or whenever it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically knocked the guy out because he hit him with an elbow. And then as he turned around, hit him again as he turned around. So this guy seems to have a little history of cheap shots. And I don't love that. So I was glad to see him only be able to get 7 minutes.
Do you know what shouldn't happen? If
What's
you
that?
Throw a blatant cheap shot and a teammate of the person who got cheap shotted comes up to defend that teammate, they probably shouldn't get a tech.
Oh, I agree 100%. That was ridiculous.
And you should, like, so technically in that play, he got a flagrant foul and a technical.
Right.
And the only thing that happens is two free throws and the ball?
Yeah.
And obviously it was a double tech, so those cancel, whatever. But, yeah, a team shouldn't get a technical for reacting for you giving a cheap shot on a guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Trevion is just defending his guy.
Right.
I mean, because Sasha took it, you know, the shove, whatever it was, and then kind of just turned around and got back on defense, and then Trevion was like, oh, no, and kind of jumped in and got in Payne's face. And I'm glad he did that because that shows this team is ready to fight and they're not going to be put down and cowed by a little push, a little cheap shot. They're ready to go to war for each other, and I love that.
Yeah, at the time, I didn't realize that this was the same guy from the Florida game. Wish I would have known because that makes it even more blatant. Like, that's what he does.
Yeah.
He gets frustrated, and he goes for people's heads, and we don't have room for that.
No. I mean, you can hate a player as much as the next guy. You can be frustrated in your situation, but you got to understand you're going after people's heads. You're going after people's livelihoods, even if they're not going to be playing ball in the future. That's their brain. Their brain is pretty important for anything they do. So just that kind of stuff is just cheap. And this was in 2021, by the way. So this was last year. So Omar Payne, I have no love for you. We'll hopefully see you again in Mackey. And I have a feeling the paint crew will be giving him some business when they come back to Mackey.
Yeah. Talking about this game, I have one question for you.
Yeah.
What surprised you most about Edie's game and his effectiveness?
Honestly, I mean, just the fact that he did it against Coburn, because we faced a lot of teams, you know, so far this year that are very good. But I don't think any team has someone like Coburn that he's faced. I mean, Coburn, like you said, 7 foot, 280 some pounds. I mean, he is a big, big, strong man. So to see Edie go up against him and be so successful and so efficient, 9 of 14 was just phenomenal to me. And he got two blocks, which, you know, he's not the best defender on the team or in the country, but he's really improved. And to see him have those numbers was just kind of astounding to me. He just looked so locked in. He looked more locked in than I've ever seen him.
Yeah, I am shocked that he was able to challenge Coburn so much and consistently while only picking up two fouls.
Yeah, that's a good point.
His defense and just, I think he felt comfortable playing someone that big finally. Like, he didn't have to be sheepish with him.
Yeah, yeah.
His elbows weren't just in his face.
Exactly what I was going to say.
So, like, yeah, it was just marvelous to watch him play, and just his footwork is outstanding and just able to be a menace and just shut Coburn down without lunging, getting out of position, or drawing fouls. And what is really the first time Edie's been challenged like
that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because, I mean, not every team is going to have a guy who can even match up with him physically. And Coburn not only has the height, granted it's 4 inches difference, but still, you know, 7 foot is still 7 foot. And then again, you know, Coburn's in the 280s, 290s. He is a well-built dude. So it's hard to go up against a guy like that. And Edie just did phenomenal. So I think for me, final shout-out's got to go to Eric Hunter Jr. 31 minutes, 3 of 4. Made his only three and was a perfect 4 of 4 from the line. So this is what we need, and this is what we want from Eric Hunter Jr., especially when Thompson, again, had a game where he was only 1 for 4 from three, only played 19 minutes, recorded no assists, wound up with 3 points. So this is what we need from Hunter if one of these two guys is going to be the point guard to lead this Purdue team.
You think Hunter will start on Thursday?
I think it's looking likely. I mean, Hunter's had 2 good games in a row, and Thompson has had 2 very bad games. So I would think if a switch is going to be made, now is going to be the time.
Yeah, I feel it. And it'd be nice to see, like, did Hunter figure something out that he can be effective cutting to the hoop? You know, he's a pretty good finisher around there when he has some space. So working off of Trey, being able to get those 2 easy buckets in double overtime, that's huge. So hopefully this is the start of him getting his mojo back, because we've both been kind of confused by what we've been seeing from someone who is a senior. He shouldn't be falling off. He should be, you know, relishing this and really stepping into his own. And
yeah,
we finally saw that a little bit today.
Yeah.
Well, Monday.
Yeah, right. And I know he would love to have that one miss back, because if I'm remembering correctly, it was a breakaway layup as time was expiring, right?
That is correct.
Okay, yeah. He just blew by some people and then just couldn't get it to finish at the hoop. So you saw his face. They showed him right after, and you could tell he was like, oh, man, I was so close. He'd love to have that one back just to go perfect 4 for 4 in the day. But, Casey, any final thoughts about this Illinois game? Do you think this is going to be, or at least for now, goes down as Purdue's best victory?
Yeah, on the road, I think Illinois is a good team, and I think they're going to finish probably close to the top 10. So, yeah. I don't think we have a better game on the schedule at this point. The Villanova one's going to be good. I think they are a top-tier opponent as well. But
yeah,
a true road game against a Big Ten opponent, yeah, that's a big-time win.
Yeah.
Bring on the Hoosiers.
That's right. So speaking of bringing on the Hoosiers, we're going to take a break, come back, and look ahead to the game against the hated Hoosiers coming up on Thursday. And we are back. So as I said before the break, Purdue's next game coming up this Thursday, 7 p.m. on FS1, going to what used to be Assembly Hall. Now it's like Simon's.
Is it not Assembly Hall anymore?
Well, it is. It's like the Simon Schatz Center at Assembly Hall or something weird like that. I don't know. They sold out for the money, so. They got rid of the simple, nice and clean Assembly Hall. So now they wanted that money because the reason they needed the money is because all the coach buyouts, you know, those things add up. So Purdue heading to Bloomington, never a fun place to play if you are a Purdue Boilermaker squad, and also never a fun place to watch a game if you're a fan and you don't have the money for very good courtside tickets, because I have been to a game at Assembly Hall, and oh my goodness, that top deck is a death trap. That thing is so steep.
Media seats suck as well.
Do they? I've not had the luxury.
They do. I don't believe there were fans last year, right?
That's correct.
So I was at the last three Purdue games at IU, covering all of them. All of them victories.
Damn,
and that
right.
is just... it's the weirdest stadium. I wrote about it after, I think... I don't know if it was my first one, but it was the block charge game.
Ah, the blarge.
Between Thomas Bryan and Caleb Swanigan.
Yeah.
And that had to be the first time that I was there, because it's this weird stadium where if you first walk in at those doors right at the entrance, it looks like a high school gymnasium.
Yeah.
And it's got this weird nostalgia to it, and you can't help just to be like, oh, wow. And then you look up and you're like, wow, those seats go to the sky. But if you go up there, the place is just complete garbage.
Yeah.
And anywhere you sit that literally isn't on those first, high school seats at the bottom, just a train wreck. You're sitting in the media and you're up and back and
talking. Yeah, where is the media seating?
It's like right at where the split is. So you're like the furthest up of the bottom half.
Okay.
And you like have the ledge over you. So yeah, it's not great. Just not happy people, like angry fan base.
Oh yeah. They're
awful. They're
angry all the time.
They're just like, ugh. It's just a gross place.
And they're known for, chanting racist things and homophobic things and sexist things at players.
Last game was the fuck you Harms.
Yes. Yeah. They went after Matt Harms. They called his sister ugly. Or no, that was Haas.
Haas. Correct.
Yeah. And it's like, what are we doing here?
Thank God the other news didn't break out before we had to get IU.
Well, yeah. Jeez. So like I said, I've been there for a game once, went there with the paint crew. I want to say it was like 2010. But I mean, Purdue won, so that was great. We got to walk out of there singing Hail Purdue and got a lot of F words yelled at us, and that was fun. But I mean, we were literally...
Don't be mad. They don't know words longer than four letters.
Yeah, so we had to buy a big block of tickets. And of course, when you're buying a big block of tickets at Assembly Hall for a Purdue IU game that late in the game, you're probably going to get some crappy seats. We were literally in the very top row of the balcony.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're literally, as we were walking up, a girl was trying to get to her seat and like tripped and fell down like four rows.
No.
Like she was absolutely fine, and she wasn't even drunk, but it was just one of those things. It's like, I don't know how more people do not fall on this thing. I mean,
it's bad.
It really is so steep. I mean, you have just – and it's a terrible sight line too. I mean, if you're at a certain row up there, you're missing one whole like out-of-bounds line for the court. So it's just – it's not a good place to watch a game unless you can get really good seats. And it really makes you appreciate Mackey Arena and, the circular structure of the interior, so that there's really not a terrible seat in Mackey.
It's the antithesis of Ohio State Stadium, which is pretty nice and modern and everywhere is a pretty good seat, only no one's there and no one cares. So it's an awful game experience. IU, like, at least it is an experience, but the actual place is just break it down and build a new one. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
We deserve better.
Well, but again, they don't really have the money because they're paying who knows how many coaches right now.
How many wins there in a row do we have to have before we can like take claim of the stadium?
Well, right now, Purdue actually has the longest winning streak of any team ever at Assembly Hall.
Have you been reading some of the Twitters? I believe it was Habitual Boiler that came out with a bunch of fun facts about things that have been or not been since the loss. There's never been a TikTok about an Indiana team beating Purdue.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Just reminds me of the meme that went around of there's never until this Sunday, there was never a text message sent about the Bengals winning a playoff game because text messaging was not invented.
Yeah.
So let's I just pulled up Habitual Boilers Twitter feed. So let's see.
It's a good list.
Yeah. 1987, the last time they won a banner, is closer to the Korean War than it is to the present day.
True facts.
So
R.I.P. Grandfather.
I mean, it's just, okay, here we go. Things that didn't exist the last time IU basketball beat Purdue. AirPods, TikTok, Amazon's Alexa, the show Stranger Things, the movie Rogue One, Finding Dory.
Finding Dory! That whale has been lost for a decade!
The world champion Chicago Cubs.
Oh my god, that was forever ago.
Broadway's Hamilton.
No Hamilton?
Princess Meghan Markle.
I don't even know who that is.
Well, she's the princess who basically defected to America.
Right.
Two-time Super Bowl champion.
That
Peyton
blew my
Manning.
Mind. Hasn't yeah. he been retired for like 18 years?
Well, it sure feels that way. And then, of course, last but not least on his list, President Trump. So, you know, it's not all bad.
Some things were better back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot to love about these Purdue teams just going in there and winning at Assembly Hall. I mean, there's really no win sweeter as a Purdue fan and as a Purdue player. I mean, there's just been a bunch of great games played there. Just some heartbreakers. Chad Austin hitting a great winner over there. I mean, the games just, no matter how good IU is or how good Purdue is, it seems like they're always going to be a fight when we go to Assembly Hall. And I don't really expect this one to be much different. I'd love to be wrong. But Casey, I know you are not very high on this IU team,
no.
Specifically their star, Trace Jackson Davis. Tell me why I should not be worried.
I mean, if you're looking up into a night sky, like, even a little bit of light's going to carry. It's like, you can call
that was
it a
very
star.
Poetic. That was beautiful.
You can call a star if you want to, but it might just be a tiny blip in the cosmos that no one's ever going to think about again. He sucks. I hate him.
I was waiting for the analysis. I was like, all right, now he's going to tell me about Trace Jackson Davis, and then, but then just nothing came. So
nah, it's year what? Four? Is he? No, he's a sophomore. He's only been around here 2 years. God, he's been way more annoying than that.
Yeah, well, because there was a lot of talk that he was going to be one and done, and he was like, oh, well, you know, he's so good, and it was just, they were so thrilled to have him come back.
Like, he's good. He is athletic. He plays hard. He knows how to do the things he's good at. If he were on a really good team, he would be the third best player. He's
right,
not...
I remember we talked about this around Chris time.
Because he's not, he still can't shoot. He's... not a facilitator. The one thing he does, well, he doesn't turn the ball over, but you don't turn the ball over when you shoot every time you have it.
Right, yeah.
He's a good rebounder. He's not great. 21% defensive rebounding rate, 9.2 offensive. Those are fine. Those are good. He shoots the ball a lot. He finishes a lot of possessions, but mostly he's on a team that can't score. So they rely on him to do a lot of heavy lifting, which is why, you know, they beat Nebraska by six. He is the reason why they had the 74th best offense in the country. It'd be worse without him, but the ceiling on this team offensively is so low. And he is, everything he does looks good on a highlight. But
right,
he's just not what you build a, like, this is not a contending team. They are not a particularly scary team because they haven't really surrounded him with the kind of players that you would want. They are very limited around him. Kopp and Stewart are both good shooters, and that's all they do. Their assist rates are below 10 each, and they play guard wing positions. That's not what you like to see. Their best players are all just really one note. They don't have much variety. They don't have much... If you take them out of what they do, they don't have much to answer. And Purdue for once comes in, you know, we have a team full of guys that can do a lot of different things. And it'll be interesting. This seems like a game to me where first will be important.
Okay, why is that? Why?
His body and everything, his height and speed, that makes sense to me to guard Jackson Davis.
Okay.
I don't think he'll shut him down, but Gillis is on the smaller side. And... you know, he's not the best at staying in contact with his player. First seems like a guy that run him out there for 15 minutes, use all five fouls.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just make Trace Jackson's Davis's life hard while he's on the floor. Box out hard, contest everything.
The good thing about having two fours who I'm really comfortable out there with is just like we said in the last podcast, you know, going against a guy like Coburn, you got 10 fouls, you might as well use them. Right. And it's the same way when you got two fours that you can throw in there. They've got 10 fouls. They can make this guy really uncomfortable out there and really hopefully knock him off balance. And to go back to our earlier point, You know, Matt Painter was hired in 2005 as the Purdue head coach. In 2005, the IU head coach was, any guess? Can you remember?
Is this before Weirdo Lick His Lips?
Yeah, oh, much further. Much before.
Was it Davis?
It was Mike Davis.
Wow.
That is correct. So since Matt Painter was hired in 2005, can you remember how many coaches IU has had?
Since 2005.
Yes.
I believe this is the fifth?
Sixth.
What?
However, I will give you partial credit because the list includes Dan Dockich, who only was able to coach 7 games as the interim head coach after they fired Kelvin Sampson.
Dockich coached in my lifetime at
IU? Oh, yeah. Because, so, here's what happened. You know, they had the whole fiasco with Knight being fired in 2000 because he was a terrible piece of shit. And was both verbally and physically abusive. Mm-hmm. And if you come into my mentions and defend Bob Knight, you will be blocked, you will be muted, and I will give you the Shea Serrano treatment.
Bam.
Of tweeting a picture of
Tweety
me
birds.
Giving you the finger.
Tweety birds.
You can just get out with that. So he was fired, and then Mike Davis took over. He was there from 2000 to 2006, and then Sampson came in 06 to 08. Of course, he was fired because he was breaking all sorts of NCAA rules. Whether you like those rules or not, and they aren't the same rules anymore.
They were rules.
They were rules at the time. He broke a lot of them. So then he was fired not in the middle, but toward the end of the 08 season. So Dockich was on the staff at the time and then coached the final 7 games for the IU program. And then our favorite prodigal son, Tom Crean, was hired and was there from 08 to 2017. And then we get the Archie Miller, my short king, from 2017 to 2021. And now currently we've got Mike Woodson. And I don't think we know enough about Mike Woodson to kind of judge him yet.
I do.
Okay. I mean, it just seemed like, and I know he's an IU player and, you know, everybody's like, oh, he was one of Bob Knight's favorites.
He's their ninth option, right?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But my point is, like, someone being buddies.
I'm pretty sure Jesus was going to sign up to coach the team at one point, but couldn't quite get the contract to work.
Well, you know, that Brad Stevens wanted the job, but they just couldn't connect.
Right.
That's what every IU fan will tell you. Brad Stevens really wants the IU job. Sure, it's opened 4 times since, you know, he's been a prominent name, but, you know, none of the times were just right.
Well, he's busy coaching in the NBA. Oh.
He was, and then he decided to be a GM.
Mm.
Yeah, so it did seem odd to me that I not to belittle what Mike Woodson has done in the NBA, but the guy has not been a college coach, and it's a hell of a lot different in the NBA. So
where he was also not very good.
Well, there you go. But if your main reason for being hired is Bob Knight liked you and you were one of his, you know, guys back in the day, I don't really have much respect for that hiring process. So we'll see how he does in the long run.
Yeah. I wasn't scared.
No, yeah, not at all.
If they would have hired Chris Beard.
That would have been a nightmare.
I would have been terrified.
Yeah, because Chris Beard is a killer.
Yep, specifically towards us. But
yeah.
Instead, they ended up with a Mike Woodson.
Yeah.
I mean, we could pretend to care about breaking down this game, but it's rivalry, and they're a dumb team. And they're stupid. And they lost to the Boeheims. There's like 14 Boeheims on that team.
I know. The whole team is Boeheims.
They lost.
IU has a very bad history with Syracuse. If you remember, I think back in maybe 2013, they played them in the NCAA tournament. And you would have thought that it was a surprise that Syracuse played a zone. I mean, IU was just like, I don't know what to do. And then they couldn't hit anything. And
but that's
just kind
of the thing, right? IU hasn't been able to shoot a jump shot for 15 years, 20 years?
Yeah, it's wild.
They still can't shoot. They're 34.6% for 3. 116th best shooting team in the country. If you take over that job, you're in Indiana. There are plenty of jump shooters here.
Right. That's basically,
I see them all
Indiana
the time.
Indiana is jump shooters.
And they just can't do it. I don't know what's like in their head. They're a good defensive team this year. That's the one thing you can say. They play hard. They have absolutely no size.
Yeah.
They are going to get Edie just got done punking the best center in the country that doesn't play for Purdue or Gonzaga. And now he gets to go up against rail-thin Trace Jackson Davis, something called a Michael Durr, and Race Thompson.
Something called a Michael Durr.
It's going to be a long night for IU. That's my prediction.
Man, I hope so.
We have the three best players on the court, and most nights the four best. Because
yeah.
Sasha's better than Tracy Jackson. Come into my mentions.
Please. Oh, they will. They will.
They don't listen to this.
To me, the thing that blows my mind is, you know, as you talked about, Indiana, the state, not, you know, IU, mm-hmm. always has a lot of good basketball players. We always have good shooters. Mm-hmm. Always a lot of big name recruits and highly ranked recruits come out of the state of Indiana. And it's always wild to me over this last, you know, 10-year period when a big name recruit chooses IU over Purdue. I get on some level that, you know, it's the state is pretty divided over Purdue IU versus where you grew up. And did you have a parent or a family member that went to one of the universities? And that's kind of where your loyalties lie. I get it. But for these highly ranked recruits, I mean, these are business decisions.
Well, they're also not good.
But I don't blame the players for that. No. I blame the coaching at IU. Because if you take somebody, I mean, like Rob Fennessy grew up in Lafayette. Ended up going to IU.
He's also not that good.
Well, but I think if you were to take him and put him on Purdue, you know, 3 years. No, listen, on Purdue for his entire career, I think he'd be a much better player.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there is some of that, but also they just, I think their biggest thing is they whiff on talent. They, like, rankings is what they go for, and that's not how you build a program or a team. We see it with Painter all the time. Our roster is this good because we picked guys that weren't, you know, top 30 recruits. We got people that made sense and that are actually good at basketball and doing basketball things.
Yeah.
IU just goes for the fancy names. Like, their teams haven't made sense for a decade. The players don't work well together. They're not guys. They come in with these super high pedigrees. They don't succeed after IU either.
No.
They're not generational guys. We've had more success in the NBA than them. In the last, no.
I mean, the only thing I would quibble with
Oladipo
there would,
and
yeah,
Zeller.
Would be Victor Oladipo. Yeah, I mean, like, Zeller, it's not like Zeller had a stellar NBA career, but
right.
And I mean, as much as I wanted to hate Victor Oladipo, the dude just, he was so fun to watch.
Yeah, he got really, hurt, so.
Yeah, and I mean, he really improved over his time in college.
Yeah.
From a guy who you didn't have to worry about to his senior year when you were like, oh, holy shit, Oladipo's coming. We got to figure out how to stop him. And he's just had such hard luck in the NBA, injury-wise.
Also, that was 2013.
Oh, was it really that far back?
So, like, yeah, in the last 5 years, like, it's not like these five stars are going on. Even, you know, Langford is barely sometimes playing for Boston. Like, he was a high round pick, but he's not done much more than, you know, Carson Edwards. The only difference is he stayed on the roster.
Yeah.
It's just, they have not gotten coaches that know talent. They don't get the best out of their talent. They don't get better. There's a lot of problems down there. And
yeah,
I don't know what it is. Is it the mystique of Indiana, the state in basketball, or is it really those banners from four decades ago? For some reason, Indiana still has this weird echo of relevance that they haven't earned in 20, 30 years.
No.
It doesn't
no.
make sense to me.
Yeah, it's almost like when you hear Rutgers football fans talk about how, you know, they were the first football team and they played the first college football game. And it's like, dude, no one cares.
Yeah. Nebraska
it's fine.
Football.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good comparison. And of course, Nebraska football fans, as you mentioned on the podcast last week, some of the most annoying. So it kind of goes well that the IU basketball fans are also right up there. I remember we went as a bunch of students when I was at Purdue. We went to the Big Ten tournament. So this was when each school got a block of tickets, and you like they had. Each team had a section in the upper arena that was all students. So we went up there, and like grown ass adult IU fans would come up and like yell at us. And I was like, dude, you are like 50
okay,
years
don't,
old.
Don't imply that they meant to. They got lost. Okay.
It's
directions
like,
are hard.
Like, I'm all for you know, a rivalry and talking some shit here and there, but like, you're telling me. You decided as a grown-ass adult that the best thing for you to do would be to come out of your section, go up to where the students are, and come over and yell at them. Like,
it's an angry fan base. Yeah. That is an angry stadium. That is the number one impression you get watching the game. Everything they do, like, Mackey is loud. You call it magic because it's this energy. It's this, like, chaotic excitement. It's just pure 100% unadulterated anger. at IU.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's their defining mantra as a program now.
Well, I mean, they got that from Bob Knight.
They did.
I mean, he was an asshole. Well, I guess still is an asshole. He's still alive. I mean, just the way he carried himself transferred into the program, and they've been chasing his ghost ever since he was fired in 2000. And they've never really been back to who they want to be since then. I mean, they went to the title game in 2002, I believe, and lost. And
how'd they treat that situation?
Yeah, not well.
With grace and dignity, right?
Yeah, yeah. I remember watching that game. I was still in high school, watching it at a friend's house, and I think there was maybe one other Purdue fan there. And I just remember we were both cheering so hard for Maryland. We were like, come on, come on! And then when IU lost, we were just like celebrating, and everyone was like, oh, shut up, Purdue didn't even get it. I was like, don't care, you lost! So, I mean, at a certain point, you got to stop talking about those banners, and you got to show me what you're doing now. And what they're doing now is not making the NCAA tournament. So I'll take Purdue over IU any day.
Cheers to that, my man. Cheers to that. We're going to win by 12.
Ooh, I love it. Let's just end it there. That's perfect. So this was fun. I hope you enjoyed our Tales of the Cactus, reliving the great double overtime victory. And then, of course, always shitting on IU. Feel free to let us know if you have a great story about IU sucking or their fans being terrible. We would love to have there is an endless supply. So we'd love to have them. Let us know. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll chat with you next week.
Later.